Today's global consumer is clear in their demand for safe, affordable, and sustainable protein. To continue to meet these rising expectations requires both leadership and collaboration with food chain stakeholders, academia, and the veterinary community. Animal Health is pleased to amplify the voices of leaders throughout the protein supply chain here on this podcast, caring for animals and creating trust in food.
Welcome back to the Caring for Animals and Creating Trust in Food podcast. I'm Jane Dukes, and I'll be your host as we celebrate National Beef Month and National Egg Month. Makes me hungry just thinking about it, and I'm calling this episode Steak and Eggs. This year, we're focusing on what consumers say they want more of, transparency from the food value chain from farm to table. In a consumer research study conducted last year, two-thirds of consumers reported transparency in animal protein, meat, fish, eggs, and dairy is extremely or very important. But only 35% of consumers surveyed feel the animal protein industry is transparent about sustainability or animal care and treatment. That's a gap we can help fill, so we're answering questions on our podcast with the help of our expert guests. If you have questions, click the SpeakPipe link in the podcast show notes and let us know what they are. So let's get started. Today, we're celebrating U.S. cattle ranchers who provide beef to the world. The economic and cultural impacts of the American cattle industry are extensive. The United States is the world's largest producer of beef, primarily high-quality grain-fed beef for domestic and export use. We have the largest fed cattle industry in the world and 28.9 million head of beef cows, according to the USDA Cattle Inventory Report in January. It is an industry that is deeply ingrained in American culture, and in the United States, cattle production consistently accounts for the largest share of total cash receipts for agricultural commodities. We're also celebrating the U.S. egg farmers and the incredible egg they produce. According to the USDA, U.S. egg farmers produced more than 113 billion eggs in 2019. And according to the American Egg Board website, per capita consumption is about 280 eggs per person annually. About 50% of egg production is concentrated in the Midwest and the top three egg-producing states, Iowa, Ohio, and Indiana, my home state, produce one-third of the eggs. 87% of eggs produced in the United States are unfertilized table eggs, produced for consumption and what you find at the grocery store. So I'm so excited to welcome my guest today. Dr. John Sticca is a meat scientist who has been president of Certified Angus Beef since 2006. He joined CAB in 1999 as assistant director of its feeder packer relations division. And 24 years later, John guides grassroots programs to deliver premium beef from family farmers and ranchers to consumer dinner tables. He has also led the brand through 13 consecutive years of record sales. Emily Metz has been president and CEO of the American Egg Board since 2020. Prior to joining AEB, Emily was the head of global research and development communications and new product marketing for the world's largest animal genetics company, Genus PLC. Prior to that, she was chief of staff at the National Milk Producers Federation, where she oversaw the farm program, and that is where Emily and I met. We're going to have a great conversation today. John and Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
I'm so excited. So celebrating National Beef Month and National Egg Month, we're so lucky to have you with us today. Emily, we've known each other for over 10 years, and I'm so glad you were able to join us. I know you've been very busy this past week. You have such an interesting background. You've worked in dairy cattle and the swine industries, and you're also an attorney by training. As we begin today, tell our listeners what's happening at the American Egg Board, and also, what is the most common consumer question you get, and how do you answer it?
Well, thanks for having me. Happy to be on, and happy National Egg Month. You know, we're coming off a very busy weekend, which of course is Easter, so lots going on. This is the second year that we have been the legacy partner of the White House for the White House Easter Egg Roll, which brought more than 36,000 consumers to the White House lawn on Easter Monday, which was this past Monday, April 10th. It is the largest public event the White House holds and a great opportunity for our farmers to be out there telling the story of the egg and telling their story of their farms and how the egg gets from farm to table and, of course, from farm to the White House lawn. So that, you know, of course, backs us into Easter, which is our highest consumption and demand period for eggs. Great opportunity for us to be sharing new recipes, really tapping into consumer trends. And then we also, our farmers were really committed to, you know, giving back. They did a really focused push in the 2 weeks leading up to Easter and Passover, and they actually donated 5.5 million eggs coast to coast as part of an initiative that we called Fighting Hunger by the Dozens. And our farmers, you know, are price takers. They're not price makers, but they also take the responsibility to feed people very seriously. And so they've doubled down on donations already this year. In the first quarter of the year, they've given more than 15.5 million eggs to food banks and food pantries nationwide. But they wanted to really push in advance of Easter and Passover to make sure that no one went without. You know, Jane, you asked me about the number one question we get. We get a lot of very random questions, but I would say the most consistent piece of concern or question or misinformation still lies around cholesterol. We have a lot of insight work that shows that cholesterol remains the biggest barrier for increased egg consumption. And surprisingly, because we all thought that people didn't listen to their parents, but actually the millennial population is the one that has the highest concern about cholesterol. We know that those older generations were, you know, bombarded with those messages around cholesterol, and apparently those have filtered down to millennials who are now parents themselves. And so we're really trying to address those misconceptions around cholesterol and eggs.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities between the beef industry and the egg industry in terms of the issues that they have to combat. So thanks, Emily. John, I'm so glad to get to meet you. I've heard all great things. You've had an illustrious career at Certified Angus Beef, and you're going to celebrate 25 years there next year. So congratulations. Please share with our listeners what makes Certified Angus Beef the best, and then what's happening at CAB, and what's the most common consumer question you get?
Yeah, I think ultimately from a Certified Angus Beef standpoint, we like to say if it's not certified, it's not the best. And so your comment is and question is very relevant to what this brand has built its entire legacy around. But when we talk about what the brand is trying to deliver on behalf of beef producers and Angus breeders, it really comes back that first and foremost, we're going to be the best tasting, that we're never going to have to be a product you have to apologize for. We may have to defend the price, but we never have to apologize for the quality of the product. And that consistency is really, I think, a calling card for the brand over the last 45 years. You know, along with that, one of the promises we make as well is we're going to be the best selling. And we're also going to be the best sourced. And I think that brings us to kind of the conversation that we're having around transparency and interest in the brand and in agricultural products in general today. So looking forward to the conversation that we're going to have. You know, the things that are going on here at the brand that keep us busy, it really does come back to really helping consumers match their level of understanding with the increased level of interest they have in beef or in really food production systems in general. So we have 160 team members here that are all focused on increasing the level of understanding and engagement that the brand has with every segment of the business, from the producers and Angus breeders that own the brand to the processing facilities that ultimately box and certify the program, to the retailers and food service distributors that ultimately represent the product to grocery stores and restaurateurs that ultimately sell it to consumers. And so we're never short of things to do here. And it really is almost always focused around education. And, you know, as we look at the questions that we get from consumers via the website or through our social channels, we get a wide variety, Emily, just as you do. Everything from cooking techniques to nutritional questions about beef or Certified Angus Beef to what cut of beef is the best for this dining experience versus another to where to buy the product. I think it always is interesting that when you go to our website, one of the most popular pages that we have on our website is our cuts of beef page. There's an interest in knowing where a tri-tip comes from, where a tenderloin comes from, or where short ribs come from, or what in the world's a ball tip or a hanger steak. And we get a lot of those questions. So it's usually an opportunity to engage consumers in a manner that not only is informative, but honestly probably helps them as they're probably trying to prepare an item that they really maybe aren't exactly sure what they bought when they were at the store.
Sure. And more consumers are dining at home still nowadays, carrying over from the pandemic. So thank you, John. You know, as I said, when I was preparing for our conversation today, I thought it was interesting that the American Egg Board and Certified Angus Beef had so much in common. Both of you were established around the same time. The Certified Angus Beef brand was established in 1978, and the American Egg Board was created by an act of Congress. I didn't know that before I started working on this podcast, but it was created by an act of Congress in 1976 at the request of America's egg farmers who wanted to pool their resources for national egg marketing. Beef and eggs are also facing similar challenges, rising input costs, some supply challenges, consumer demands for transparency, just to name a few. So let's start with the state of the industry. Emily, I'll start with you. It's not easy to be a farmer, and egg farmers are dealing with a lot right now. We talked about some of this, inflation and economic disruption, like the rest of us, labor shortages, like all of agriculture, labeling of imitation eggs, transitions to cage-free production, and California's Prop 12. Those conversations continue to be ongoing, and highly pathogenic avian influenza that as of mid-November last year had affected more than 50 million birds across 46 states, which for a time, demand exceeded supply, leading to higher egg prices consumers continue to complain about. Can you give us an overview of what you see for the rest of 23 as we move forward?
You know, I think to your point, it's this turmoil, so to speak. The food and agriculture and egg industry has been an interesting time to talk about agriculture publicly. You know, last year at Easter, we had record media engagement, and we thought there's no way we could ever top that. The first 3 months, or really January of this year, was media coverage to a level that in my career, I've never seen for any agricultural commodity, just in terms of the level of social media conversation, of media conversation. I mean, you had Taylor Swift talking about it at the Grammys. I mean, it felt like a minute there that there wasn't anybody that wasn't talking about eggs. But even with as acute as that conversation was, it still only represented 2% of total conversations about inflation, which I find really interesting. So, you know, Jane, to your point about the perfect storm of kind of challenges last year, that's really what it was. The industry did a masterful job, and I would be remiss if on any conversation I didn't mention the job that the industry did in dealing with HPAI last year with bird flu. We learned a lot of tough lessons in the industry in 2015, but I think all of our farmers would say, you know, they took their lumps there because biosecurity wasn't perhaps where it needed to be. We hadn't been thinking about some of the things that we are thinking about now and put in place to be able to deal with an outbreak of bird flu like we had last year. You know, we had farmers who made massive capital investments in shower in, shower out facilities, in transportation of workers, of, you know, minimizing truck routes and you know, contact between farms. We even had farmers that were putting in laser light systems to try to, you know, mitigate birds landing on their farms and in their grass and all of that. So we were very prepared. And despite kind of the record number of birds that were affected last year, the industry recovery time was much, much less than it was in 2015. We were able to repopulate those flocks much more quickly. We were able to rebound much faster. And so I think the outlook for the rest of this year is strong. I think, you know, for me, kind of as a marketer, it's hard because you wish that you weren't adding more burden to the farmer's plate. You know, it seems like there's always something new. You know, a couple years ago, everyone was like, well, you know, we need to be better with sustainability. So then I feel like agriculture went through this very quick transformation to make massive improvements in terms of our impact, which was already very low. Then I feel like we were in the labor bubble where it was like, well, we need to be better with labor. So the industry, again, across the board, you know, no matter what kind of protein category you're in, massive investments in worker training and workplace safety and, you know, employee empowerment and those things are all great. And now, you know, we've got disease, which seems to be the next frontier in the egg industry for sure. And that's just one more kind of cost of doing business. And our farmers take all that head on. In terms of the cage-free transition, I think for us, you know, we need to do a better job having those conversations. I think people became acutely aware of the choices they made, perhaps at the voting machine, that they weren't aware of this January when they saw those prices that were already a little bit elevated, even more elevated in states like California and Massachusetts, where a cage-free mandate went into place. We need to do a better job of talking about what those different production styles and practices really mean and making sure that people understand that there's trade-offs. And I frankly think this is a conversation that probably agriculture needs to have across the board. There's no one silver bullet in terms of production. And there's trade-offs in everything. You might want a cage-free egg, and that's great because that aligns with your value system, but there's going to be differences there in terms of sustainability, in terms of labor, in terms of mortality, in terms of all of those things. And we have to find a way to communicate that to the consumer. So to me, that's our next frontier of challenges this year and into the future, is how do we talk about those trade-offs as we see farms evolve in terms of their production styles and practices.
Well, and we can't forget that there was a lot of research that was done, animal welfare research, on what the best housing system was for the hen, and cage-free wasn't it. So we made a choice that really didn't have the welfare of the bird at the forefront.
It was not. Yeah. We did a life cycle assessment last year. We have the results now in hand, and it only underscores for me that conversation about trade-offs. But the other thing it underscores for me is agriculture is moving so fast now that you're trying to measure stuff that people are already in the process of improving, and then that measurement changes greatly. And I think that's what you're seeing with cage-free. You know, when we started to respond to these legislative actions and the industry started to pivot and add in cage-free production, you know, that was a learning curve. Well, now they're at the top of that learning curve. So they're already putting in improvements in place so fast that those numbers from a year and a half ago that we were measuring on farms are already out of date, because they've already course corrected those things that might be, you know, might need a little bit of continuous improvement. And so that, you know, that's an exciting thing for me to be able to work with, as well as just an industry that's so committed to moving as fast as they can on the journey of continuous improvement and making those changes.
Sure. And I think that transparency and helping consumers understand, you know, what these choices look like, those conversations are really important, because consumers are 3 to 4 generations removed from the farm. They don't have an understanding about perhaps how food is grown and raised. And so we can help them with that. Thank you, Emily. We could have we could have 3 podcasts with the two of you. So, John, the cattle industry faces similar challenges, higher input costs for feed and energy, labor, and the weather. The drought has had a tremendous impact on the cattle industry, resulting in a high rate of cow culling last year that has created a relatively fluid supply situation that the March-April issue of Beef Magazine reported will take years to work through. While 2022 saw record highs in beef production of 28.3 billion pounds, there is a predicted decline in 2023. But this is a cycle, and there's light on the horizon. Can you give us an overview on what you see for the beef industry coming at this year in 2023?
You know, as you look at, maybe in comparison to a lot of the things that the egg industry is addressing currently, there's a tremendous amount of optimism in the beef industry today. I think in part because producers at farming and ranching level have gone through maybe some of the worst of it. You know, in particular, you know, labor has always been an issue. Inflation is up, and rising input costs has always been an issue. But the drought, the things that you just can't control that happen to our industry and happen to farmers and ranchers, those are the most difficult. And you mentioned the liquidation of cows. Those tough decisions that families have to make have been some of the most difficult, Jane. There's no doubt about it. But I think most of those decisions have been made, as there's been a level of optimism that's probably driven by two things. One is rain. I think as you look at what producers can now focus on, coming out of cow liquidation, they can now begin to focus on how to rebuild the herd. And what we see when that happens is that whenever we rebuild the cow herd as a result of situations like drought, we rebuild that cow herd with an even stronger focus on two things. One, and what's extremely important, is what types of cattle, genetics and phenotypes, fit the environment that they're operating in. That's a way for producers to even further dial in their production and management systems to fit their environment. The other thing is that we also tend to rebuild these cow herds with an even stronger attention towards aligning with consumer demands. Because we are in a period of tight supplies, as tight supplies come stronger prices. And we've seen some phenomenal prices that are going to help, rural America heal in a lot of ways financially. And what we've seen is a situation where consumers have been willing to pay more for our product. And I think what we've learned that feeds my optimism, Jane, as much as anything, is we saw this back in 2008 when we saw record high prices. And the assumption was that, well, everyone's going to trade down. And what we saw is that consumers do not buy on price alone. They buy in price in relation to value. And if you understand what consumers value and you align your production systems for those to align with that, I think the opportunity is there to be the financial beneficiary of that alignment and those decisions. I think the data supports the optimism that we're seeing from a production standpoint and a beef merchandising standpoint for the demand that consumers have for our products, not just here in the U.S., but around the world.
Right. You know, I look at a lot of research, too. I keep tracking the demand for beef has not fallen off, and consumers are still buying those high-value steaks. So let's talk a minute about consumers and their need for transparency from the food value chain and the transparency many are looking for, according to our research, on the protein label. What are Certified Angus Beef and the American Egg Board doing to deliver the transparency consumers are looking for and delivering that on the label? Emily, we'll start with you and then John can jump in.
You know, we've done a lot of research. We actually started a new insights hub about 2 years ago, Jane, in an effort to really understand perceptions around eggs better than anyone else. And that hub has really become of incredible value, not only to us internally at AEB, because we've put insights at the core of everything we're doing, but it also has become a great asset for our industry, for our producers, as they're talking to customers and consumers, and also for our customers themselves. You know, we're working with major, major customers across the value chain who are coming to us now and saying, well, how are people feeling about this? Or where's this trend? Or, you know, how is this tracking year over year? And so it's become of incredible value. And one of the things that we have found consistently, we've made food, unfortunately, over the years, right, wrong, and different, a little bit of a NASCAR, you know, car in the retail aisle. And we've slapped a lot of labels on it. And we perhaps haven't always explained what those different labels mean. And so there's a great deal of confusion. And I think the egg carton is one example of that. You know, we put on the egg carton pasture raised, cage free, organic, you know, free range. There's just a litany of claims that we slap on those cartons, and there's a significant amount of confusion. And so one of the things that we're really dialed into right now is an educational effort called There's an Egg for Everyone. And it really is an attempt to explain just the facts, ma'am, type of methodology of here's what these different labels mean, and now choose the egg that best meets your family's needs, values, etc. Because there is an egg for everyone, but we need to understand what those different eggs are and how those eggs come to be. We're also experimenting with a lot of, you know, the QR code. People got so familiar with that during COVID. How can we build on that and use that as a vehicle for further education as well, and really use that landscape of the carton, that space of the carton, for good instead of confusion? So that's our big effort there right now.
Isn't it interesting the QR codes made a comeback? So it was a thing, and then it wasn't a thing, and now it's a thing again. And, you know, at least you guys can stamp right on the egg. I have seen where there's something stamped on my egg that I purchased. When you're talking about beef, the meat package is only so big. How many labels do you want to put on there? And also, consumers don't understand the labels. And I think some of our own marketing efforts have caused that confusion. So, John, what about you? And what is Certified Angus Beef doing to provide that transparency to consumers?
Yeah, no, you bring up a great point. And, you know, we see it on the beef side as well. There are only so many labels you can put on a package, because consumers also repeatedly tell us that they want to be able to see the meat. They want to see the product. So you can cover it up with labels and still end up not meeting the needs or expectations of the consumer if they can't also see the product. And so one of the big areas that we focus on is people, and bringing people to the forefront. You know, I think across all of agriculture, farmers and ranchers are extremely proud of what they do. But they also, in many cases, don't seek a lot of attention. But we oftentimes, in conversations with producers, also try to communicate that you can't have transparency, which they all want, and anonymity at the same time. You have to be able to come to the forefront in times. And that's honestly what we've spent a great deal of time over our 45 years is telling that producer's story for them. So if you go to our website, if you go to our social channels on Facebook and Instagram, you're going to see us bringing people to the forefront. because that's really where the relationship and I think the story and effort of transparency starts. Those are the things we focus on. I mentioned our educational efforts before. We do a lot of ranch days, taking people from different aspects of the business beyond the ranch to visit farms in different parts of the country. And oftentimes what we find is that when you take customers and guests to a farm, they're as interested in understanding the name of the farm dog as they are in understanding how artificial insemination works. You know, it really is about giving the customer and the consumer the chance to ask the questions that they want rather than really force feeding them information that we think they're interested in. Those are a lot of things that we do. I'd say the other thing that we tend to focus on is bringing the next generation along. Here just recently, we did a Culinarians and Ranchers event where we brought culinary students from Johnson and Wales here to our culinary center, as well as the next generation of farming and ranching, and just let them have dialogue. And that's a really fun way for us to better understand what our role is moving forward. It's not only to expose end users and consumers to beef production, it's also exposing beef producers to the food service and the retail world and what questions consumers are really asking those people that we expect to represent our product. And so we've done a number of different things, putting cattlemen and women in the kitchens of restaurants, to putting restaurateurs on horseback and having them experience what ranching life is like on any given day. And so it gives you some idea in terms of the way we're trying to bring people to the forefront.
Right. And also, when you bring people together and you develop those relationships, they can connect on a shared value. Because at the end of the day, we're all consumers, including farmers. And the farmers are putting the food out on everyone's dinner table. All right. So we can't have a conversation and not talk about animal welfare. Animal welfare is a topic of increasing importance to consumers. It shows up in a lot of research, including our own research. Let's talk about how you're prioritizing animal welfare and what are some initiatives that Certified Angus Beef and the American Egg Board are implementing.
I think that's a great question, because what we know is that when you ask a consumer about sustainability, it really translates to animal care. And so one of the things that we've been focused on is how do we begin to further the culture of animal care among the farming and ranching community? Because I think we all know, not only is it the right thing to do, are they emotionally drawn to treat animals well, but it also is economically significant as well. And I think, Emily, it goes back to what you were talking about, sustainability. It's all the things that come back to putting us in a position to pass these farms and ranches on to the next generation. From our standpoint here, what we've chosen to do is really focus on a tool that's there within the industry and has been for quite some time, and that's the Beef Quality Assurance Certification Program that really allows farmers and ranchers to go through this certification and learn a little bit more about proper handling of cattle, but also to validate their concern and their point of interest in making sure that consumers can trust them to do the right things. And Beef Quality Assurance Certification is one of those things that's available to the industry. It's an easy thing to complete and takes us a long ways down the road of providing insight for the consumers of how important we as cattle producers believe animal care is to us and the next generation that's come after us.
Right. And Emily, we've talked a lot about animal welfare and animal welfare programs on the dairy side. Now you're over with eggs. Tell me about what's going on. How do you prioritize that at the American Egg Board?
So, you know, our sister organization, United Egg Producers, runs the certification program, UEP Certified, which the vast, vast, vast majority of the egg industry adheres to. And in that program, there are, you know, very stringent standards about animal welfare. I see it as our role to really communicate, again, going back to some of what I said earlier about the transparency and labeling for eggs. The, you know, biggest bucket of continuous improvement opportunities is really around housing and how do we better manage our housing systems. I think it's almost similar to pork, honestly, in a little bit of that way. That's where the consumer concern comes from. That's where our welfare challenges come from. That's where, as I like to look at it, the opportunities for continuous improvement come from is really around housing. And then for us at AEB, how do we tell that story and, again, present those facts in a way to say, look, there's an egg for everyone, but here's the different factors that go into making that egg what it is and the different on-farm styles that come into play and the trade-offs of those different styles. It's really exciting to see the industry move as fast as they have in terms of continuous improvement. And I think a big part of that is technology. I mean, we're able to measure so much more when it comes to health and welfare now at an individual bird by bird level than we've ever been able to before. And that technology is going to allow us to continue to make improvements. And I think the third thing for us at AEB around animal welfare is how do we get our producers access to, you know, more funds for research projects, more funds for different studies, more funds for test pilots. You know, we've seen a lot of that in sustainability. I haven't seen as much of that in terms of animal welfare. Capital remains a big challenge in making improvements. There's a huge willingness to make improvements, but securing that capital and securing that ability to invest in that is sometimes a challenge. And so I see one of our big opportunities at AEB is how can we identify, you know, partnerships, collaborations, grants, new funding opportunities to give our farmers access to that capital to make some changes or make some improvements along the way.
That's very exciting. Well, this has been a great conversation. Thank you, John and Emily, for joining us today to celebrate National Beef Month and National Egg Month. Thanks also to our listeners. We'd love for you to rate, review, or subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode. We'll be back next month to answer your questions about milk and dairy. Please be sure to click the SpeakPipe link in the podcast show notes and submit your questions for our upcoming guests. You'll also find helpful links to the American Egg Board and Certified Angus Beef there too. We'll see you next month.